A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning, Andrew. But before we begin, I just want to check. Microphone on the right way round this time?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, hang on. Here we go. Yes.
Great. You haven't got your headphones on your feet or anything like that?
No.
You know how exacting I am about the audio standards of this podcast, Andrew.
I know. I feel like I let you and the listeners down last week by talking into the wrong end of the microphone.
You let me personally down.
I know. I'll try and make amends.
Thank goodness. So you're back on home turf.
Back in my office, in my studio, talking into my good mic, into the right end of my good mic. Still slightly, I don't quite know what sort of day it is or time it is and that kind of stuff.
Well, it's 11 a.m. in Ireland and the UK. What time does it feel like it is to you?
About 10:33. I'm catching up. You know,
you're getting close.
I'm getting close. Yeah, it was a bit of a strange weekend because I left Los Angeles on Friday night, Los Angeles time, got into Dublin at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, went out for, you know, I slept a bit on the plane, so that was quite good. Went out for a couple of beers and a bite to eat on Saturday evening. Did not have a late night, went to bed, slept. And I don't quite know how to describe it. I had sort of fitful, surreal sleep. Where in my sort of, I don't know if you can call it consciousness because you are asleep, I felt like I had to sleep in cubes. I don't even know what that means.
Right. Like it literally sort of folded up like a cube.
Yeah. Like I had to sleep within the confines of various cubes laid out like a Tetris shape or something. So I think my brain was doing a number on me and had a reasonable night's sleep last night. But I feel like I'm getting close to being back on track because, you know, it was 8 or 9 days away and you do lose track of time on that side of the Atlantic.
Andrew, I'm hoping that your kind of sleepless, fitful nights will kind of bring us to par on this podcast, you know, introduce some sort of parity. I've been in that state for several months now. So,
yes.
You know, it could be good for the chemistry of the pod. We're coming at it from the same place.
All right. That's good. You know, I like when everything is sort of simpatico and, you know, we're all on the same sphere of existence.
I think we can say that we are. I enjoyed, I listened to you and Andrew Allen groggily recounting events from the SoFi Stadium. You were very taken with that arena.
Oh, holy shit. It's unbelievable. Extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. It is otherworldly. You've been to stadiums.
I have been
to stadiums. And you kind of think, well, I know what a stadium is. Like, how different could it be? How much more of an experience could it be? But it really is. The pictures, the videos, they don't do it justice because everything is on this sort of enormous scale. There's escalators going up and down all over the place. It's like a futuristic shopping mall with a pitch right at the bottom. And I was on the fifth tier. You're below street level. The entire complex, if you want to call it that, between the outside and the parking lots and all that, it's just an enormous piece of real estate. Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very impressive, which I suppose when you spend $6 billion, it would want to be. But still, I was a bit taken aback by it.
Well, I suppose, I mean, you called it real estate there. And, you know, while KSE and the Cronkies sporting expertise has been questioned in the past, I think they're real estate sort of arm of their business portfolio hasn't really been in question. I think that's an area where they are particularly strong. And yeah, I mean, it must have been quite a... I noticed the other day it was Stan Kroenke's birthday. And, you know, all the Arsenal aggregators posted, you know, happy birthday, Stan Kroenke. It was really fascinating.
Did they?
Looking. Yeah, I saw it. I saw it. And it was really fascinating looking at the replies. And there was such little negativity. The attitude towards him, to the ownership generally, has shifted so much. But I suppose the stadium, in some respects, must have been quite an impressive demonstration of what they are capable of.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm.
Did somebody first post happy birthday to Stan Kroenke and then all the aggregators just copied and pasted that?
God knows. I think maybe I said it on a YouTube video and, you know, it just got picked up. I didn't know it was Stan Kroenke's birthday, but I'm glad there are people out there keeping tabs on this sort of stuff.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's part and parcel of the, you know, the Twitter experiences. You know, happy birthday to, you know, former player who played one game for Arsenal back in 1952.
Yeah.
Got to get that sweet, sweet content out there, you know.
How did it make you feel about the Emirates Stadium? Which is, well, you know, it's amazing how quickly things change. We think of that as the new stadium. It'll be almost 20 years old, you know.
So yeah.
I mean, how did it compare, and did it make you have any reflections on the current state of the Emirates?
I mean, I do think there is a difference, isn't there, between US stadiums in general in terms of, you know, how they do food and drink and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sort of hard. It feels like you could fit a couple of Emirates stadiums into SoFi. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, it's a 70,000 capacity. That's what they said.
Yeah,
70,000.
I think it can be increased, but the standard capacity is 70,000. But yeah, it feels much bigger than that.
Huge, huge. I mean, I suppose, like any stadium that's been open for nearly 20 years, there are things, you know, that could be improved and things that could be made better. I mean, the one thing that the Emirates has got that SoFi doesn't is an incredible pitch. Mm. SoFi did not have an incredible pitch. They had a very, very, very bad pitch. But, that's part and parcel of what happens when you put a pitch down the day before a game. You know,
yeah.
They don't have that.
I think I heard you say on the pod, had that been another fixture against, you know, at another stadium, I think it's very possible that Arsenal would have said, we're not playing this.
Yeah, I think that's possible because it was so bad. You know, you could see the joins between the rolls of turf and, you know, I guess the fear is for Arsenal and maybe for Barcelona as well, is that a player would do themselves an injury on that.
I remember last summer when Arsenal were on tour, I forget which city we were in at this particular point in time, but they had booked, maybe it was Baltimore, they had booked certain training ground as their base for that duration of the tour. And they turned up in advance a week beforehand. The Arsenal groundsman went to inspect it and basically said, no chance, we're not training here. So they are very exacting about the sorts of surfaces they're prepared to train on and to play on. And I suspect had it not been, you know, the Kroenke's stadium, I just don't think they would have played that.
Yeah, I mean, there were Arsenal ground staff on there doing their utmost to make the pitches manageable, I suppose you could say, as it could be. And there were moments where they were sort of dropping a ball and it just wouldn't bounce.
Yeah,
you know, it really wasn't good. I suspect somebody was called into a meeting with Stan, you know, already a bit hungover from his birthday celebrations. Someone was getting a piece of his mind.
He'd been up
pitch.
All night reading all the Twitter happy birthdays. he was in a foul mood the next day.
Yeah. Stan stuff on Twitter, I believe.
Well, you loved it. Fans. You loved the tour. You had a great time, right?
I had a great time. Met a lot of people. Met a lot of fans in New York and in LA. And it's always a pleasure, you know, yourself when you meet people who listen to the pod or read the blog or all of it. It's just great. It really is. And I think Arsenal did good stuff out there as well for the fans. There were some events that went down really well, and you know, in the stadium on. God, when was the game? Last Wednesday. You know, there was a lot of cohesion among the Arsenal support. You know, there were a lot of Barcelona fans there, but the Arsenal fans, you know, were well organized. They had the TIFO thing going on. They were singing songs in the concourse, you know, 30-odd minutes after the game. So there was that sense of, you know, a united fan base. And, between the Arsenal stuff and the sort of, you know, general drinking cocktails near the beach stuff. It was a very enjoyable trip, for sure, for sure.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. So what's been happening? You know, I've sort of lost track of news and things like that. You know, when you're far away, you don't tend to check social media as much.
Well, obviously, as you know, we beat Barcelona, so we're officially good again.
Yep.
And going to win the Premier League and everything else.
That's
nice. I suppose
nice.
That we've got to start with the story that broke yesterday from David Ornstein about Arsenal's interest in David Raya. Case of deja vu.
Mm.
Slightly out of left field. I don't know how many people would have seen it coming. And yeah, I think it's a really fascinating development in this window.
I do too. I think it's very interesting for a number of reasons. You know, the main one, I think, is what the implications might be for Aaron Ramsdale. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the one that just first sprung to my mind. It's like, what does this mean for Aaron Ramsdale? This is a player that Arsenal just handed a new contract to a little while ago, right?
In May, I think it was. I think it might have been even the last fortnight of the season.
Right,
he was actually signed.
Right.
Mikel Arteta, by the way, I had a look at that article today just to see what the quotes that accompanied it were. Mikel Arteta said, "We are all so happy that Aaron has signed a new contract. The way Aaron has developed over the past 2 years has been exceptional, with his performances, contribution, and overall adaptation to the club. It's great that we're continuing to build our future with our biggest talents in the squad. We're all looking forward to enjoying many more years of Aaron the player and the person."
Well, I mean, that sounds like somebody who's very comfortable with Aaron Ramsdale. I apologize here. I've just got ink all over my fingers. I don't quite know how. I picked up a pen. It's
Are
a
you
green...
holding a squid just before?
No. No.
I know sometimes, like, instead of doodling, you just like to sort of, you know, fondle a squid.
Yeah, no, I forgot to take one out of the squid tank downstairs.
Okay.
But it's the weird thing is, it's a green pen, but I've got, like, red or pink ink all over my hands. I don't really understand what's going on. Anyway. Arteta sounded very, you know, comfortable with Aaron Ramsdale there. There is, you know, the two goalkeeper dynamic that we've experienced before when you've got two goalkeepers who are, you know, of similar caliber. I'm not sure it's always worked that well. I do wonder why it's happening, though, you know, because it's a fairly substantial fee as well, £40 million of a fee. That's what's being quoted, whether that's what it ends up being. I mean, do you think this is a question of Mikel Arteta, like in every other position, more or less, there is genuine competition, right? Mm-hmm. From defense to midfield to forward, there is genuine competition, you know, in pretty much every position. But in this position, with goalkeepers, it doesn't tend to work like that. You know, you think of Alisson at Liverpool or Ederson at Manchester City, and I'm not saying Ramsdale is quite that, but the gulf between your very obviously first-choice goalkeeper and the deputy is quite apparent. I think that's kind of what we've got right now with Ramsdale and Matt Turner, but we certainly wouldn't have that with Ramsdale and Raya. So is it a case that Arteta is looking to, like, challenge Ramsdale and say, look, here's another goalkeeper. You know, you have the position right now, but you're going to have to keep working hard and keep performing to keep your place, because there is somebody who can just step in.
Perhaps so. I think that this possibility of Arsenal signing Raya, and it is still that at this point in time. Mm. There hasn't been a bid. You're right about the £40 million asking price. I think Brentford, generally, when they say something in the market, they stick to it. There aren't a lot of clubs you can say that about, but they operate slightly differently. And one of the things you have to consider for them, you know, I know Raya's got 12 months on his contract, but their position is sort of informed by the fact that next summer, Ivan Toney will be in the same position.
Mm.
And they feel that they cannot do a cut price deal for Raya this summer because they're opening the door to doing the same thing with Ivan Toney next summer.
Yeah.
And they are very, very bullish about that stance. I think that the way this has come about, because look, in May, Arsenal sounded very happy with Aaron Ramsdale. And I don't buy that. I've seen some sort of, you know, querying his performances in pre-season. I don't really buy that a couple of performances on a very, on quite poor surfaces in pre-season can be a factor behind, you know, pursuing a £40 million goal.
I agree with that. I agree.
I think it's about opportunity, really. So sometimes you go into a window with a plan, but sometimes a deal comes up or a player comes onto the market that you're not necessarily anticipating to be available. I think Arsenal, like everybody else, probably assumed David Raya would be at another club by now, because there was a lot of talk about Spurs, who were very interested. In the end, they went for a cheaper option from Serie A. There was a lot of talk about Manchester United. They went for Onana. There was some talk about Chelsea. It looks like they're going for Sanchez from Brighton. So I think there was an assumption that Raya was going to move somewhere where he would be the undisputed first choice, another big Premier League club. That hasn't happened. So he's sitting there, available, with 12 months to go on his contract and Brentford willing to sell. So that's the first thing to consider. It's kind of a situation that Arsenal maybe didn't foresee. Then you've got the fact that it's a player that Iñaki Caña, the goalkeeping coach, really loves. And it's not a new thing to say Arsenal are interested in David Raya. I've lost count of the amount of windows in the past where I've said, well, they like David Raya. And in fact, the summer that Arsenal signed Aaron Ramsdale, or even the summer before, I think they were looking at Raya but couldn't find a way to do a deal with Brentford. As long as Iñaki Caña's at Arsenal, they will be interested in David Raya. He was very involved in bringing him to Brentford. He sort of personally scouted him from Blackburn and then worked extensively on his development during his time at Brentford with him. They're both Spaniards. They have a common bond there. They've remained, there's a personal relationship that continues to this day. Iñaki's a real mentor to David Raya, and David Raya is his protege. And so that is a big factor here.
And that's interesting, you know, from the perspective of, well, look, Iñaki Caña is the goalkeeping coach, and you have a very defined role, you know, within the group. But then having a kind of influence on recruitment is a different thing, right?
But that is, do you know what? That's not particularly unusual among goalkeepers. So the goalkeeper market is almost separate to the outfield player market and almost runs on different terms. For example, yes, goalkeeper coaches have an unusually significant input into those decisions. And in fact, every goalkeeper Arsenal have signed since Iñaki's been at the club, including Aaron Ramsdale, Alex Runnerson, Matt Turner. Iñaki Caña has been heavily involved in those decisions, obviously with consultation with Edu, with Mikel Arteta, with the recruitment department, but he has a big voice with mixed results, you'd have to say.
Sure.
The second thing is that the goalkeeper market is kind of a little bit different in that you can only have so many in a squad, right? So if you want another defender, you can probably fit him in. If you want another midfielder, you could probably fit him in. With goalkeepers, one coming in almost certainly means one going out. A vacancy has to exist, really, for a deal to happen.
Sure.
I suppose we'll get to what that might mean for Matt Turner. It is a bit of an unusual situation, but I suppose what you can see there is there's a player Arsenal have liked in the long term. There's his unexpected availability in this window. And I guess the third component, there appears to be some interest from Nottingham Forest in Matt Turner. I gather that the market for kind of a second choice backup goalkeeper is not particularly strong at this point in time. There aren't obvious affordable solutions for that position. So I do wonder if Arteta, Edu, the club are saying, well, rather than bringing in a stopgap, rather than bringing in someone who's, you know, not at the level, as you say, maybe bring in someone who's at a truly competitive level with Ramsdale. And let them fight it out.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's great and all. Let them fight it out. I think that, you know, can have its benefits. And if you've got genuine competition, it can push players. They can reach new levels, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But do you not then open the possibility of a situation where one or the other of your two goalkeepers is completely pissed off? Because
yes, you do. I mean,
you know,
it very rarely works. And Arsenal fans know this better than most. We remember having Petr Cech and Bernd Leno on the books. We remember having
Cech and Ospina.
Yeah, Leno and Martinez, Ramsdale and Leno. It never lasts. I think in all those cases, it lasted, what, a season? Mm. And then somebody moved on.
So, I mean, it is still an if, right? Because the money is big, and I think Arsenal probably do need to sell a couple of players before they make any more purchases in the window. I mean, if Arsenal spend £40 million on David Raya, you know, if I was Aaron Ramsdale, I'd be a bit like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, the new guy tends to be the flavour of the month sort of thing. And it could be a really healthy battle. It could be a really healthy situation, but I'm not 100% sure that that's how it's going to work out, because if one guy becomes the obvious number one, you know, what do you do? Do you do the European split, for example, where one player plays in the Champions League? Even that might cause problems, where you've got a guy who's the number one for the Premier League, and then, like, I want to play the Champions League. I want to play in the big games. I want to play in the games away from home in the big stadiums against the big European teams. But to sort of keep the peace, we have this sort of arrangement. I completely get what you're saying about the opportunity. I do wonder if you have to think about the stability and the consistency that you might put to one side in order to do that deal, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think Ramsdale is a big voice, you know, in the changing room, and very well liked by the players. So, you know, you do risk unsettling that. But, you know, if we know anything about Mikel Arteta, I think it's that he's all about competition. I mean, look at Ben White. Ben White, clear first choice at right back, and we've spent £40 million on another right back. I know it's different. I know it's different with goalkeepers, but maybe Arteta looks at this differently to us. Maybe he thinks, I need every player in this squad to be absolutely motivated to the maximum, where they feel competition breathing down their neck. That may be one way that he sees it. And another thing that occurred to me, I mean, I looked sort of through, I was trying to think if it's ever worked, you know, two very, very, very good goalkeepers in the same squad. Barcelona managed it for a time. They had Bravo and Ter Stegen, and I think they alternated in the competitions. I think one played in Europe, one played in La Liga, and they fared pretty well on both fronts. I gather that when Alisson and Szczesny were at Roma together, that was a kind of similarly productive relationship, and both goalkeepers really went to a new level because of the competition, albeit that they ultimately moved on and found, you know, homes elsewhere. But I always come back to that thing of it very rarely works. I mean, Arsenal women, I messaged Tim Stillman last night because I had sort of a dim memory that Arsenal women have a kind of comparable situation in some respect. So they brought in a goalkeeper in January, I think it's D'Angelo is the name, to provide competition for the number one, whose name I'm struggling to pronounce but begins with a Z. Do you know who I mean?
Zinsberger?
Zinsberger, exactly. Manuela Zinsberger. And the sort of perception there is that they have two goalkeepers of kind of very similar ability but slightly different styles, and that Jonas Eidevall might go with a kind of horses for courses approach. Who knows? Maybe Arteta sees that as a possibility. I just tend to think that goalkeeper is a position that really benefits from consistent selection and communication, understanding, the confidence of knowing that your place is secure. So, yeah, I'm fascinated to see how this might play out if it actually happens.
If, yeah.
'Cause I sort of know what you mean. I mean, I wonder what the conversation with Raya would be. I imagine it'd be very similar to the conversation with Aaron Ramsdale when he signed. You know, you're coming in, there's a man in possession of the shirt, but we believe you're good enough to be the number one, and you will at some point get your chance.
You know? But I mean, I think it was, you know, there was a stylistic element to that as well, wasn't there? In that, you know, we had a, to be fair, Bernd Leno was definitely an upgrade on Petr Cech when it came to playing with the ball at his feet, right? Mm-hmm. Because Cech couldn't. You know, he looked like a man in wellies most of the time. And Leno was a clear upgrade on that. But then Ramsdale was very much an upgrade on Leno in that regard.
Yeah.
And, you know, Arteta went to significant lengths to persuade Sheffield United and Aaron Ramsdale that this was the move to make. You know, he clearly saw something in him that made him ignore all the criticisms and all the external outrage and fury over, you know, signing a goalkeeper who's been relegated twice because he believed in what this guy was going to do. I do wonder in this case, like, is there a significant upgrade if you add Raya to the squad over Ramsdale? I'm not sure that there is necessarily.
Listen, I think David Raya's a really good goalkeeper.
I think he's a very good goalkeeper. I mean, I did have a quick look at some of the stats today because what struck me was like, well, maybe they're seeing something in, you know, how he uses the ball.
Yeah.
Just based on last season, Raya and Ramsdale, Raya's short pass completion percentage, 97%. Ramsdale, 96.9%. Medium passes, 97.9%, Raya. 98.2 Ramsdale, and long passing 44.7% Raya, 35.8% Ramsdale. That's the only one in which there is a significant difference between the two. Save percentage, Raya 77.7% and Ramsdale 70.6%. Neither of them have very good penalty saving records either. So I know that that was something that people were talking about with Aaron Ramsdale, but David Raya is not any better when it comes to saving penalties. So, you know, do you risk the stability of your squad for a player who isn't necessarily that significant an upgrade, you know, whereas previously Leno was over Cech and I think Ramsdale was over Leno?
I think it's a debate, isn't it, how much of an upgrade Raya is. Mm. I think a lot of people really rate him very highly, especially with the ball at his feet. But I think that it's not like signing an Alisson, for example. You know,
no.
I think broadly, Ramsdale and Raya's ability is kind of close together. And Ramsdale's the younger player. I think Raya's 27.
Yeah.
So you would anticipate Ramsdale still improving as he approaches his peak. I think that Arsenal would be in a position where they genuinely would have two goalkeepers who are very, very close in terms of stature.
Mm-hmm.
And all that makes me think is that that must be deliberate. You know, we've spoken in the past about the problem of rotating in Matt Turner or giving him the European games, and how that prohibits some of what we want to do on the ball. Whichever of Ramsdale or Raya you pick, hypothetically, I don't think the drop-off would be significant. I think you'd be able to play the same football. You just come back to that point of, can you keep two goalkeepers happy?
I think that would be Mikel Arteta, one of his, if he managed to do that, it would be one of his greatest accomplishments because
yes.
Nobody else seems to be able to do it, and if he can do it on top of, you know, everything else that he's done to improve Arsenal over the last few years, I think it would be another feather in his cap. But
also maybe he can't, Andrew.
Yeah, no,
maybe he can't.
Maybe
like
he can.
maybe he accepts that and he's like, that's elite competition and that's being ruthless and someone will lose this fight and so be it, because I demand the best.
Yeah,
that,
maybe
to me,
that
feels
too.
Like quite a Mikel Arteta thing to think.
Yes.
And the only thing I would say genuinely is that I think obviously with Raya coming in and potentially and with such a big fee attached and the relationship with the goalkeeper coach and, you know, ability on the ball, all these things added together, you know, there'll be a lot working in his favour. But I also think Aaron Ramsdale has made a career out of proving people wrong. And I think it would be foolish to write him off in that fight. I think it would genuinely be fascinating to see how he responded to that level of pressure.
I agree. Like if you can make it a positive environment, then it could be really beneficial, as I said a bit earlier on.
Yeah, it's really difficult though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you've got two goalkeepers, we've all seen games as Arsenal fans where we've had a goalie and goal and one on the bench. And how many times have we seen the TV director cut from a ball going in the back of the net to the guy sat on the bench?
Yeah.
And it becomes a narrative that kind of hangs over the season.
Yeah.
It's a really delicate balance. It's you're managing egos, expectations. But
yeah, I mean, I think they have very deliberately crafted a dressing room that is without too much ego. I think that's fair to say that there is a sort of, look, there's always little squabbles and everything else, but it feels pretty harmonious. And even with an opportunity like this, it seems strange to me that they would do something that might potentially cause problems within the group. You know, like you say, Ramsdale's a big character, very popular, English. You've got an English contingent of players as well. Like the risk versus reward is something that they must have thought about quite strongly.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of hurdles to clear before it can happen. Anyone you speak to around Arsenal right now, and I don't know, you might have had similar conversations in your time in America, but this phase of the window is about selling players.
Yes, basically. Yes.
And until Arsenal do that, I think it's kind of pie in the sky that they could pay that much money for a goalkeeper. I think they really need to move people on before that can happen. Yes, at the moment we are still talking in terms of the hypothetical, but just a really interesting, you know, I think a bit before every window, we always say, oh, there might be something that happens that surprises people. I did hear about this interest a little while ago, but wasn't sure it would come to fruition. But, you know, I think maybe with the interest in Turner, as I said, that's sort of creating a bit of a domino effect of, well, if we're going to bring somebody in, they need to be off the level. Bayern Munich have been interested in Raya. I'm enjoying the fact that this summer, nobody wants to go to Bayern Munich except Harry Kane, who's desperate to go to Bayern Munich.
He's desperate to go anywhere, I think, at this point.
That's a nice little subplot.
I mean, let me just try and put this in a different context.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about the striker position. We've talked about, you know, what's going to happen with Balogun. We've talked about what, you know, Eddie can bring to this team, what he can and can't do, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there is probably a desire among certainly some fans to see us add another striker to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Do we view competition for strikers differently than we do for goalkeepers? So if we, you know, sold Eddie, sold Balogun, brought in a, I don't know who it might be, you know, Johnny Big Name. So we bring in Johnny Big Name, you know, as a striker. He's got to compete with Gabriel Jesus. That feels more aligned with what players are used to when it comes to scrapping for their places. Because, you know, if you're the striker and you score the goal, you think you're going to keep your place. Balanced with that, of course, there's an element of variety that maybe Johnny Big Name is a different kind of striker, gives you a, you know, different option, a different tactical option, etc. You know, maybe it's something we have to rethink about goalkeepers.
Well, that's it. I mean, I get let's have intensity of competition for every position, but yes, there are certain positions that would be ahead of goalkeeper for me as a priority in that sure. respect. Centre forward would be one, maybe right wing would be another. But who knows? Maybe there are plans afoot. I mean, it's we don't know yet what Mikel Arteta is thinking, and we won't know until we see how he picks the team over the first couple of months of next season, if this comes to pass. You know, and I think as well, we should do Matt Turner the credit of sort of not writing off his Arsenal career until a deal is done and he decides to take it. I mean, I think we sometimes talk as if Matt Turner is not a good goalkeeper. I don't think that's fair. I think he is a good goalkeeper, but maybe not necessarily the right goalkeeper for this team.
I know he was involved in the Gold Cup games for the yeah. US, but I have to say I was a little bit surprised that given Arsenal were out there that he wasn't involved in any way with the tour. Mm. I did find that just a little bit surprising. Like, I know he gets to go on his holidays and he and his wife had an addition to the family, I think, not too long ago. So, you know, he needs some time off and all the rest of it. I just figured, like, as the number one goalkeeper for the US men's national team, and Arsenal were in, you know, DC, they're in New York, they're in LA, to not be part of it in any way just felt a bit weird to me.
I agree. And maybe that was indicative of, you know, the situation. Mm. I think Matt Turner's position has been that as the US number one, if an opportunity came up to play first team football mm-hmm. in the Premier League, he would definitely be open to that. I don't think he would have been unhappy to stay at Arsenal and, you know, compete or be the understudy to Ramsdale. But if he could be number one somewhere, I think he would want to do that. Forest have come in, and from what I understand, they would see him as someone who would play a lot of games for them. So that, you know, that might be something that appeals and may suit Arsenal as well if they're trying to create a vacancy for a David Raya. Mm. Another thing to in Raya's favour, by the way, he does qualify homegrown. I know it sounds like a small consideration, but it's something Arsenal have to consider. He's been in England since he was a very young man, and he would, you know, he would fill that quota too. So he fits the bill in a lot of ways for what Arsenal want. It is just an unusual situation, especially given how recently they handed Aaron Ramsdale that big number one salary.
Sure. And also, let's not forget, paid something in the region of 6 million or 7 million for Matt Turner mm-hmm. last summer, which is, you know, I think a substantial fee anyway for a goalkeeper coming from MLS.
Yeah.
Right? So it'll be very interesting to see if he goes to Nottingham Forest, what kind of fee we might get.
Yeah. I think given the year he's had with America, you've got to be hoping to turn a profit there.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to find the money to pay for David Raya. Yes, it will be very interesting to follow this one. I do think that Brentford's negotiating... You know when we went in for Caicedo with Brighton?
Mm.
Brentford run themselves in a similarly bullish fashion. I'm really enjoying sort of watching from a distance Chelsea trying to buy Caicedo and having multiple bids kind of knocked back unceremoniously. Mm. And I'm quite glad we're no longer in that position. But Brentford are kind of similar in terms of how set and fixed they can be regarding their expectations. You know, they held on to Ollie Watkins for a long time before
sure.
the fee they wanted was triggered. They're very disciplined about this stuff.
Do you think we might have any players that Brentford might be interested in?
Well, that's a great question, because Brentford are very smart and like to use the market to, you know, to their advantage. If a deal could enable them to get a player they might not otherwise be able to afford or buy, then that could be a consideration for them, for sure. So, yes, I mean, listen, this is pure. This is literally the second I thought of this. But somebody like a Flo Balogun, for example, feels like a very Brentford signing, you know, especially for a club who've got Ivan Toney suspended currently and with doubts over his long-term future with his contract situation. This is complete spitballing here.
Sure.
But it would make a certain degree of sense.
I mean, it would, but, you know, I'm logging off Twitter, you know, so I don't have to see Brentford get a striker that they can use while we get a goalkeeper we don't really need, all that stuff, you know, which, you know, I could understand that. That's what I mean. But I just wonder, given the size of our squad, given some of Mikel Arteta's comments, you know, about how it's unsustainable to have a group that big. You know, like you said, I talked to a few people out there on the tour, and the focus very much is on trimming the fat, if that's the way you want to put it. Well, selling some players, I guess, is the right way of putting it. I've lost complete track. But, you know, there might be a temptation to do a deal like that because it's convenient, because you can get something that you want. It may not be, you know, financially quite as beneficial, but you do have to make this squad a bit more manageable in terms of size.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I do think the interest in Raya, I think it does show a kind of ambition from Arsenal to even be talking about another player of that caliber at that kind of fee after the business we've done in this window, I think demonstrates the degree to which we are not messing around. The summer of Les Dudis continues apace. But I feel like this might be a situation we're talking about for some time, simply because of the players' contract situation, Arsenal needing to move a few players on.
Sure.
I feel like this is a discussion we'll probably be having over the next few shows.
Not much else happening in terms of outgoings. I did see reports of Austin Trusty maybe going to Sheffield United, potential loan deal there.
I mean, listen, I think Austin Trusty is a really interesting player for Arsenal to have on their books. I think I'm right in saying he's a left-footer, centre-back.
Yeah.
Had a very good season in the Championship last year.
Hello, guys. I just hope you're really well.
Sorry.
Is he now 24?
That was you coming in. I was just, I had your video there about the Raya deal. That's why that just played.
Oh, really?
I just clicked the tab and
you
it started playing.
You just heard most of it, to be honest with you, mate. I'm recycling content everywhere. I think, Austin Trusty, I mean, alone, I guess, might be a little bit disappointing, given that we're in a position where we'd like to bring some cash in. But maybe they feel, you know, there's not an urgency to it, and another good season on loan will increase his value.
Am I a bit mad, or did we have some kind of weird deal? Is he actually officially an Arsenal player, or was it like a long loan from...
No, I think he is an Arsenal player, but he was loaned back to
that's
Colorado
what it was.
Rapids
in
the first instance. He is our player, and he's a USA international now. I'd like to think there'd be some money for him somewhere on the continent or somewhere in this country.
You think they're just looking at another loan deal to sort of, you know, he had a good loan deal, or, you know, was he Birmingham's player of the season? I think he was.
Yeah, it may be that.
Another loan deal might just sort of increase awareness and his value a little bit.
Get a few more international caps under his belt. Attract a Premier League suitor potentially. Maybe so. Maybe if the permanent market isn't there for him, a loan makes sense. I mean, I definitely don't think he'll be part of the group for Arsenal.
I mean, Sheffield United are in the Premier League next season.
Oh, so they are.
So he is going to have that extra exposure, to the top level. And with that, I guess the awareness of a player grows, you know. So I'm with you. I think, you know, he's somebody that we should be looking to make some money on, but maybe you know, they're banking on a season in the Premier League and then, you know, maybe a permanent deal to Sheffield United or another club in the Premier League or somebody else on the continent, because they've seen him in action and he is on TV a lot more, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you might get more next summer if he does well at Sheffield United.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe this loan agreement rather would have an option within it. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, he's one of the names I would definitely expect to move on in the next few weeks.
All right. Beyond that, we haven't heard much about anyone else going. So we can't even really speculate as to who might be departing, even if everybody, I think, knows the names of the players who are probably there or thereabouts when it comes to the departure lounge.
There have been some reports about Sambi. You know, we know Burnley.
Burnley,
the club most interested in Sambi. I think that the issue with them is that they only get two Premier League loans. I think I'm right in saying it's certainly a finite number of Premier League loans, mm-hmm. and they basically have to weigh up whether they would want Sambi to be one of those, or would they rather a permanent deal? And then you've got Arsenal's own expectations to consider. But there's definitely interest there. So I imagine one way or the other, he might well end up at Turf Moor.
Yeah, he's somebody who needs to go and play one way or the other. So
he missed the tour, didn't he, with injury?
He did, yeah. Had an injury. And, you know, other players weren't even on the tour, as we know. No Cedric, no Nicolas Pepe. So
we've got a ton of players in his position as well, you know.
Yeah.
Rice has obviously come in. Thomas Partey is still there. Jorginho, Elneny. It's very hard to see a route to games for him.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll wait and see what happens with the players who are heading outwards. I think we should take a break now, though. So let's do that. Do this? No, let's do that. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. Also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. This week we will announce on Patreon our Fantasy Football League for the upcoming season, cash prizes, Arsenal shirts and more to give away. And of course, the famous fourth place trophy. If you do fancy signing up, you can do it at patreon.com/arseblog. I did wonder, James, about a world in, you know, which AI is increasingly prevalent and taking people's roles and work. What if there was like a robot who did your job?
Yes.
Let's do this.
Flash forward into the future.
That's it.
The year is 2053. Andrew's co-presenting with a robot. Well, listen, it's good to know that should anything befall me, which, let's face it, it seems absolutely inevitable, mm-hmm. you've got that in your back pocket.
Well, that's it as well. It's also a healthy competition for places. You know,
know that if you've invested in... Yeah. It means there'll be no drop-off.
I call this robot Raya. Raya the robot.
Raya bot, yes. Have you got a question lined up, Andrew?
I do.
We have a lot of questions about the goalkeepers.
We did have loads of questions about goalkeepers, and we talked a lot about that. I thought this was quite an interesting one because, you know, we've talked about where else we should spend, and people will have their opinions about, you know, how the money that we might spend on David Raya could be applied elsewhere. But I thought this was a good one from Leeds Gunner, who's at Leeds Gunner 1. And he says, who would you realistically bring in to challenge Bukayo Saka to make him better? Or is he such a unique talent that this is already an impossible task?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to bring in someone of his caliber.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult to do that. I think that's what Arsenal thought they were doing maybe when they pursued Mikhailo Mudryk, and it was going to cost them 100 million euros. Who would I bring in?
I mean, I don't even really care about that side of things. I just think it's a really interesting idea, you know, that you have a player like Bukayo Saka and we're like, well, we need backup for him. We need competition for him. We need someone to ease the burden on him and all those things, which I think is perfectly normal. But are there certain players in certain teams who you just kind of have to accept are going to play every week because they are so good? That regardless of who else you've got in your squad, the caliber of that player means that they're going to play, you know? You're going to have to do without them in some ways, but is it a fool's errand to say, right, we've got to get somebody who can do what Bukayo Saka does?
Perhaps so. I think what you're looking for is someone who can play that position, maybe with some slight kind of qualitative differences.
Mm.
You know, think of the great Arsenal teams. There was never an alternative to Thierry Henry. You know, there was never anyone who was close. If he was fit, he played. And if he was out, we suffered. And that was the reality.
Mm-hmm.
I know Bukayo's not quite at that level yet, let's say. But you can have backups who offer something different and are really, you know, valuable contributors. You know, we didn't have a player of the caliber of Patrick Vieira. But in people like Ray Parlour, Edu himself, we had really, really competent players who could do a job for you on almost any day.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure we can quite say that on that right wing position, unless we're sort of moving people about, you know, and playing Gabriel Jesus there, which I do still maintain is something I would like to see. I know it sort of, you know, creates a sort of knock-on effect of who do you play at centre-forward, but I would like to see Jesus on the right. I have got a name for the right-wing position.
Okay.
If you want it.
Sure.
I almost daren't say it, but I would be looking at Michael Olise of Crystal Palace. Left-footed player from the right-hand side, 21 years old, brilliant dead ball, great delivery, slightly different from Saka because I think his game is more about, you know, cutting back and swinging those crosses into the box. But if you've got Kai Havertz arriving at the far post, that's quite an appealing thing to be able to do. I think he's a really interesting player and prospect and someone of the right sort of stature that you could bring him in as a sort of rotation option and
sure.
See how he develops.
No, I like him. I think he's a very good player. It's a good shout. I just wonder what, you know, price-wise that's going to cost you. For a player like that, you know, probably a good few years left on his contract at Crystal Palace. Again, maybe this is one of those where you look at the squad that you've got and maybe you try and do a part exchange in some ways. I know those deals are very, very rare, but, you know, potentially you could tempt Palace with one or two of the players that we have.
Yeah, I mean, there's been conflicting reports around it, but some people have reported a release clause of around £35 million. If there's a validity to that, that feels like a very fair price.
Must get our pal Dan from HLTCO. He would know.
Exactly, right.
He would know.
But yeah, I think Fabrizio Romano is one of the people who cited that release clause. It just makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm. Got a contract till 2026 at Palace.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if that clause is there and if it's valid. If it is, for a young player who qualifies for England, an attacking player with decent output, I think that's the one I would be looking at.
All right. All right.
Let's see. Let's have another question. Oh, Simon Harrington said, this is in reference to the Arsene Wenger statue, which was, of course, revealed recently. And he said, normally when statues are revealed without a quote from the, without a person there to commemorate, sorry, normally when statues are revealed without a quote, Andrew, I've gone. Turn the mic around. Forget it. The whole podcast is over. Normally when statues are revealed without a quote from the person they're there to commemorate, the person is dead. Isn't it a bit weird that all the Arsene statue stuff was conspicuously missing, you know, Arsene Wenger?
I mean, I guess so. But I mean, again, this is something that I saw last week and I didn't get into the nuts and bolts of it in the way that I would have if I was at home. Mm. Did I not read that he's going to be present at the Monaco game on Wednesday and that that might be, you know, the way that they're going to do it?
You've got that absolutely right.
Right.
I teed you up and you knocked it out of the park. He's the guest of honour.
Right.
On Wednesday for Arsenal versus Monaco, an appropriate fixture to be the guest of honour at. And, yeah, I'm sure he'll do some sort of club media, you would think, regarding the statue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good to see the statue there.
Yeah.
I think.
I'll have to have a look at it next time I'm over. But, yeah, I mean, it's good that we've got to the point where this can happen. Maybe there are still some relationships that are a bit strained, which prevented a kind of ceremonial unveiling. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But clearly there's been a thawing anyway, because he did return last season. He's going to be at the game on Wednesday. I thought I had a game or a question rather about that. Let me just see if I can find it.
I'll be there Wednesday. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Jim says. He's on the Discord, by the way. He says, how strong a team do you think Arteta will pick for the Emirates Cup?
It's a trophy at the end of the day, guys. Can't mess around. Pretty strong. I think we're into that period of pre-season where there's not much messing around. I think he'll be looking at that Man City game on Sunday very closely. I guess there's a chance he might say, well, let's play one team Wednesday, one team Sunday. I think he'll start the game with the similar 11 to what he starts with on Sunday.
I did wonder if it might be a chance, given that this is basically the last preseason game before the Community Shield, whether or not it might be a chance to give some players who haven't played a great deal a bit more of a run out.
Potentially. That is one way of approaching it. I just think back to last season and how that kind of consistent selection towards the end of pre-season fed into the season itself. I think he might go, certainly for the first 45 minutes, with something relatively familiar. I had a question actually about that, and it's from Dan Massey on the Discord. And Dan says, goodly morning, lads. Do you think Thomas Partey will start in the number six position against Nottingham Forest? We need to get off to the best start possible. And is it a case of not changing too much too soon to start the season? Could you see Rice starting in the Xhaka position, or could he even start on the bench?
Well, I suppose the thing with Declan Rice is that we don't quite know where his fitness is at.
Missed the Barca game, of course.
Missed the Barca game, got a kick in training. They didn't want to risk him. So I guess it will depend on that and what kind of update we get on that. Even aside from that, I think in the Barcelona game, Thomas Partey was extremely good. Mm-hmm. Really good. And, you know, it felt a bit more like he knitted things together in midfield.
Right.
As opposed to the Manchester United game, which I think was just a bad performance all round. You know, nobody played particularly well. But you do have someone like Declan Rice who's coming in. And, you know, he said some things last week, didn't he? I'm having to learn a new kind of footballer. I'm seeing football in a completely different light. And it might be just a new player coming in and saying, you know, this is, you know, saying, you know, trying to blow smoke up the arse of the manager and all that kind of stuff. In a nice way, I mean, and, yeah, you know. Yeah. But, it, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that there are differences between what he's being asked to do by Mikel Arteta and what he was previously asked to do by David Moyes.
I think that's a certainty.
Right? So even for a guy who's 24 years of age and has played a lot of football, there is a learning curve. And if it takes him a few weeks or a couple of months to really bed into the team, I wouldn't be overly surprised. You know, that his initial period at Arsenal might see him play a bit less than people expect.
So go on then. So first Premier League game of the season. What do you think we'll do at the base of midfield?
I know Elliot.
Balls on the line.
Balls on the... I know Elliot said this last week as well, that he wouldn't be surprised if Partey started against Nottingham Forest. And I wouldn't be surprised either. I can't quite predict it. I'd need to see the team against Man City in the Community Shield to really... to put my balls on the line on this one. Because I need them. I like them.
It's such an important position, isn't it, in the team? And a bit of continuity there is appealing. I don't, you know, we don't have to rush Declan Rice in necessarily. And I also think there are lessons probably to be learned from Manchester City last season in terms of the fact that their team that started the campaign was quite different from the one that finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were big spells of the season where big players were on the bench. Kevin De Bruyne is maybe the most obvious example. You know, we have seen in the past that Thomas Partey maybe has waned over the course of the season or had injury problems or maybe faded towards the end. Certainly that was the case last season. Maybe that's a consideration and we can kind of time it so that Rice takes over the course of the next 10 months or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't know. I honestly don't know what Arteta will do. He may take the view that we need to get this bedded in as soon as possible, but it's very... when you've got a known quantity like Thomas Partey available, it's a very tempting option, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, there has to be, I suppose, an element of common sense. Like, what is the best team right now to go out and win that game? And does Declan Rice arriving a little bit late in the window, needing a bit of time to get used to the tactical elements, perhaps not being 100% fit, is the common sense approach to go with a guy who, you know, did it for you last season at a really high level for most of the season?
Sure. The other argument would be you've brought Rice in because you think he's better than what you've got. And if you want to win that game against Man City on Sunday, maybe you push that button.
Maybe so. Maybe
really
so.
Really interesting to find out.
Yeah. I mean, this is where I think next season gets quite fascinating because having talked about the need for a much deeper squad, the manager then has to use that squad and use it in ways which get the best out of everybody because we're going to have to deal with the midweek football as well. So I think there is going to be a need for greater rotation, and it is rotation. We've got to get beyond the idea of a first 11, I think, and use the full depth of the squad as much as we can. So it will be very interesting to see what he does, not on Wednesday per se, but the Community Shield, I think, will give us a good idea. Let me ask you this one. Critical T on the Discord said, since arriving, Trossard has barely put a foot wrong. He has, in some cases, won us games. His three assists in the 3-0 over Fulham, for example. Despite this, he's often referred to as a strong backup option. Why does he never seem to be seriously considered as a starter in his own right?
I don't think that's true. I think he has been seriously considered. There was a period not too long ago when he was playing up top and Gabriel Jesus was returning from injury, and a lot of people were saying, let's stick with Trossard. You know, I think people have afforded him that degree of credit. Maybe now it's the summer and we've got Jesus back. He's not being discussed quite in those terms. But I really see him as someone who I would be very comfortable playing in almost any game. I really do think he is at the level where if he were to be picked ahead of Gabriel Martinelli or ahead of Gabriel Jesus, let's say for that Forest game, I would not have any hesitation or concerns. Mm. I think he's shown himself to be that good and that adept. I actually think he's been one of the best signings that we've made of late. When you consider the circumstances, the fee, the impact he's made, I can't say enough good things really about Leo Trossard. I think he's been brilliant.
Yeah, I do kind of get where the question is coming from, though, because when you think about, you know, your starting 11 or first choices, for example, you know, it's going to be Martinelli on the left. It's going to be Jesus up front. It's probably going to be Havertz in midfield. But I feel very happy to have Trossard. He was great against Barcelona. He's just a really smart, intelligent player at the peak of his game, you know, and just the kind of player that this squad is going to need over the coming months. But I do get why he might be considered, probably because of his age and where he's come from and everything else, that he might be considered not a first choice in any position, but like you say, the versatility he has and the ability he has to play across the front line is second to none, I think, in terms of who else we've got in the squad.
And I think as fans, and particularly as fans of this Arsenal team and this Arsenal project, part of it is that we like to project forward, don't we? We like to be like, well, in 2 years, Bukayo Saka will be this, and Gabriel Martinelli is going to be, you know, the new Ronaldo. And, you know, we like to make those projections. And it's not because of Trossard's age. We can't really do that in quite the same way.
Sure.
But what we can say is he's at his absolute peak right now. And that's a really valuable asset in a squad that is generally pretty young. Mm. The other thing about him is that even though on a kind of individual position by position basis, you might have him as the second choice, I do think there is a case that Arsenal look a better team when Trossard is in it. And I don't know if you quite know what I mean by that, but I just think his intelligence, I think we play very good football when he's on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain players who just have that capacity where they're so technically good, so smart that they sort of elevate everyone around them. And I think he's got a bit of that knack. In the same way that maybe a Thomas Rosicki did. And I think he'll have a big part to play next season.
I agree. Let me just follow up on that one with this one from Decaf Metcalf's Calf, who's at the Merhaf on Twitter. He says, on the heels of the David Raya thing, have Arsenal underspent in the front line? Outside of Jesus and Trossard, the front line consists of academy players and cheap young signings. And the last big forward signing outside of those two was Nicolas Pepe 4 years ago.
Well, there is a pattern to Arteta's spending, which is that he likes to spend money on defenders and goalkeepers, it seems. Now, that's in part because he's been blessed with academy talent and, you know, bargain buys like Gabriel Martinelli, who have filled a lot of those slots. You've got Smith Rowe, you've got Bukayo Saka, you've got Rhys Nelson, you've got Eddie and Balogun. You know, all these players cost Arsenal only what it cost them to develop them, which is kind of extraordinary when you think about it. They did try and add a 100 million winger in January.
That's true, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at the makeup of the squad, the majority of the spending has been on the back. It's a squad that, you know, there's been a big emphasis on that. I think most Arsenal fans, I know you feel this, and I think there's sort of an emerging consensus that at some point in the next couple of windows, centre forward is kind of a glaring position that might need to be addressed in terms of true depth, quality and competition, and maybe variety.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it's an interesting point. You're right. He is very lucky to have been here at the time of the emergence of Bukayo Saka. Martinelli, with, I think, Arteta's help as well, has really blossomed. So he hasn't needed to, but I do wonder if in the not too distant future we're going to have to spend fairly significant money on a forward.
Yeah. I would say, by the way, we talk about the successes quite a lot. We should mention the failures. A decent chunk of money was invested on contract for Willian, new contract for Aubameyang, and neither of those panned out particularly well. And they're not here anymore, so we don't talk about it. But, although those didn't involve transfer fees, it was a significant allocation of budget.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Okay, yeah, we had this question on the Raya thing and a few people asked it, so I thought we would do it. It was from Matt Casey on the Discord. And Matt said, "Morning, guys. Even if the Raya deal wasn't to happen, do you think it could still help light a fire under Ramsdale, knowing that his place could be under threat?"
I mean, potentially, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're any player in any position, if the club is going out to buy a player to play in that position, I guess you sort of knuckle down and double your efforts and all the rest of it. Particularly if, if you're Aaron Ramsdale and Arsenal announce that they're going to sign James McNicholas as the goalkeeper, you probably don't take it that seriously, with all due respect to your goalkeeping skills.
Mm, thank you. I'm not a very good goal. But let me tell you, the outfielders would be worried.
Yeah, they would. That left back situation, holy shit. But, if the rumours are that they're going to bring in a goalkeeper who, absolutely can challenge you, then, yeah, maybe it does. Maybe you do need a little bit of refocusing. Who knows?
I've seen a couple of people suggest, is that all this is? Is this just to light a fire under Ramsdale? I don't think that's right. This is really credibly reported. But if it's a kind of happy byproduct, I do think a motivated, determined to prove people wrong Aaron Ramsdale tends to be the best Aaron Ramsdale.
Sure.
Look at him in the adversity of an away game, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could be an interesting kind of byproduct of this interest. But yeah, I don't think it's the reason for the interest.
Yeah, it's not just a story planted to sort of get a reaction from the player. I think it's...
That really doesn't happen very much. It really doesn't happen very much.
What was the question I was going to ask you? Wise Marklar says, "What's going on with Charlie Patino?"
Great question. And I think the fact that we're not talking about it is kind of illustrative of how far we've come in some ways. I think there was a time where we would have been very fixated on what's happening with Charlie Patino because of his potential and his ability to make a difference in the future. But we're now moving into a position where this squad is very much built or being built to win right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we're not as attached to, these academy prospects as we once might have been, because they could have been the messiah, the savior. Truthfully, I actually don't know. I mean, I assume the position is still what it was, which is that he would like to play first team football and Arsenal are open to making that happen if their requirements are met. He's had no part really, has he, in pre-season in any real sense.
Did he play in that game against
Boreham Wood? Good question. I actually don't know what the Arsenal 11 was against Boreham Wood. Shall we have a look?
Yeah, let's go and find out.
The McNicholas Derby, as it's known. Can you dig it out? Here we go. His name's not on the sheet. There's some familiar names on it. Lino Sousa, Raul Walters, Ethan Ranieri, Marcelo Flores on the bench, Miles Lewis-Skelly. nothing about Charlie Patino. I'm literally going to do a Google news search for Charlie Patino.
Anything?
Very little. Very little. Rumours that QPR and Luton are interested. I mean, I'm sure, I mean, that sounds very plausible. Luton would be a good move for him. I mean, obviously they've been promoted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's pretty quiet, eh? Maybe I should find out. I'm on paternity leave, guys.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, don't go above and beyond.
Ask Ornstein.
We'll find out in due course. It is just sort of interesting that, you know, having gone, did he go public or was it made public that this was what he wanted?
A story came out. Yeah. that he wanted first team football and that Arsenal would probably.
Isn't it basically Rio Ferdinand's fault? Isn't that what it all is?
Is it?
I think so, yeah. Basically,
I mean, I find that plausible. Is there a specific reason you said?
I think Rio Ferdinand is an ambassador for the agents that Charlie Patino is involved with, and he said something like, "This Patino boy, he needs to leave." Maybe I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not quite sure, but basically,
I'm happy to blame Rio Ferdinand.
I think we should all blame Rio Ferdinand, but yeah. Not being involved in any way in pre-season is not great.
And listen, I don't mean to diminish Charlie's talent or his potential. It's purely that I think it shows you how competitive we have become and the level the squad is at, that this is not a bigger topic of discussion right now.
I think that's right, you know? And as we said before here, that if he wants to leave and go and play first team football somewhere, you can completely understand that. Because if you're Charlie Patino now and you're looking at a midfield lineup and the players that he would have to get ahead of, you know, you've got to be a little bit realistic at 19 years of age and think, is this the right place for me to be? Even if Arsenal have this track record of bringing in young players, it's much more difficult to make the breakthrough when a team is good and Arsenal are good right now. So he might need to spend those couple of years to get to the level where he might be able to compete. He's got to play. He does have to play, you know. But just curious to see where he ends up. It is a bit quiet, but yeah. Whose question? Is it mine? No, it's yours. I just asked that one about Charlie Patino.
Ali Wood has been in touch. Goodly morning, gents. Goodly morning, Ali. Many of our rivals have made good money selling players to the Saudi League, but apart from a few links to Partey, Saudi clubs don't seem to want our players. Why do you think this is?
I have no idea. Literally. Like, if they're going to buy any old chump, we've got lots of old chumps that they can buy.
We've got some chumps for you, mate.
Yeah, we're fucking chump-tastic at times. So I don't really know. I don't really know. I mean, think about
it. Well, I found it interesting. I do wonder if it's about sort of existing lines of communication or existing relationships.
Maybe, you know, maybe if you're a club where the hedge fund that owns you has been invested in by the Saudi Public Investment Fund, you've got these, as you say, lines of communication. Maybe, I don't know, just throwing this one out there, right?
Yeah.
Maybe if your club itself was bought by the Saudi Public Investment Fund... You know, you can have a word in the ear with this guy or that guy, and then they throw down a shitload of money for Alan Saint-Maximin, for example.
They did manage to find a buyer for Alan Saint-Maximin, didn't they?
Quite
a fair price.
Oh,
as well.
Absolutely. Like, knockdown price of, you know, way above his market value.
Yes. Yeah. No comment, I guess.
I'm just, you know, throwing it out there. I'm not saying there's anything untoward going on by any means.
Are there any very wealthy football clubs in Rwanda?
Don't think so.
Damn it all.
Don't think so. I had a question here. Let me see if I could find it. Matt Gunner, who's at MattGunner32, says, after seeing another successful tour for Premier League clubs in North America, have you warmed to the idea of Premier League games being played in the US? There's always some unfairness in how a team's 38 fixtures play out, so would this be such a stretch in playing one or two or maybe more games abroad?
That's a really good question, I think. And that's why given that you've just got back from America.
You're going to throw
I'm
it over
let
to me.
You have first go at this, yeah.
See, I threw this one over to you, you know, as a season ticket holder and all the rest.
Sure.
I would say I would not be open to that at all. I think it's amazing when Arsenal go to the US or go abroad and they connect with the fans and the fan base and all the rest of it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. But I think part of the reason people follow Arsenal and follow other clubs is because they love the competition, right? I'm not saying the Premier League is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Obviously, it's got its problems. But as a product, if you want to call it that, it is attractive to fans all over the world. And it's not just because of the game of football that we all love. You know, it's the fact that, you know, each team plays each other home and away. And that creates this competitive environment. I think it would take something away from those fixtures if the games were being played elsewhere. And that's not to make comment on the level of support or passion that would be present and obvious within the stadiums, because I've seen it and I know how passionate Arsenal fans are, and I'm sure that's applicable to fans of other clubs and maybe the two or three people in the United States who support Tottenham as well. But I just think it's not right. You pay your money for your season ticket. You expect your games, your home games, to be played at home. And I think that's basically sacrosanct.
You liked that stadium, though.
I did like that stadium. But you can go play another game there. Go play, preseason games. It's fine. It is a great stadium. But I do think that, you know, there are certain things that cross a line, for me anyway. And I do think that, you know, if Arsenal were playing a home game in SoFi Stadium or MetLife Stadium or wherever, I just don't think that's right. Don't think it's right. And I think the people that want to experience Arsenal want to experience Arsenal in the Emirates Stadium, you know?
Instinctively, I agree with you. I'd sort of love to know what our fans in America and other countries, I mean, I guess you're in another country, but think about this.
I'm in another country. I'm an Irish guy that started a website about Arsenal while I lived in Barcelona.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not saying this as somebody, you know, who's a traditionalist in any way. I just think you should play your home games at home. And I think the only reason that wouldn't happen is, you know, financial. And I think there are some things that money should not be able to buy. And I realize, and I know that sounds naive and everything else.
No, I know the world
we live in, but I think
instinctively, I agree with you. And if you'd asked me a few years ago, I think I would have answered this pretty emphatically. I find myself in a position where I agree with what you're saying, but I do wonder if there may be something better we can offer, something better to be offered to other countries as a live event than just a pure friendly.
Pre-season? Yeah.
Like, I wonder if there's some sort of slightly more formalized thing or something that feels more competitive, but without damaging the kind of sanctity of the Premier League.
But is this not going to be like the FIFA Club World Cup thing or something like that? Where,
yeah, we'll chuck them a League Cup final or something like that. I don't know. But
yeah.
You've seen for yourself like how global the club is. And particularly in the US, Arsenal are just so massive. And with the US ownership as well, part of me wonders if there will come a point in time where something takes place offshore.
How would you, let me ask you, you know, on a very basic level, you pay for your season ticket. How would you feel if the final home game of the season was taking place in America or Australia or Japan or China or somewhere where there's a big Arsenal fan base? You know, how would you feel?
If it was the final game of the season, that would feel particularly wrong, I think. But if it was like a game against West Brom in February, you know, I know what you mean,
but like, it's not going to be a game against West Brom, is it? Because, you know, you can sell it. If you're going to do that, you're going to try and make it a big fixture. Apologies to, you know, West Brom, but
I think I could accept it. There's so much in the game now that I have to sort of adapt my views to make sense of. And there'd be so many Arsenal fans that might benefit. The problem is, like, what's fair? Like, oh, we play a game in America now. Well, what about Arsenal's fans in Asia? What about Arsenal's fans in Africa? That sort of starts to become murky and difficult and tricky. I suppose all I can say with confidence is that, like, my views on it are slightly more flexible than they were. And I think that there might be a point in time where we do see a competitive game of some nature, whether it's like a Club World Cup type thing among Premier League teams. I don't know. It feels like in some ways it may be an inevitability. And I'm not quite as angry about it as I used to be. But yeah, equally, it's sort of not my preference. Yeah. I'm sorry that sounds like a fudge, but I suppose the point is to say that my views on it have slightly softened, which surprises me, to be honest.
Yeah. I guess you
But
just...
I'm in a super privileged position, Andrew. Like, I get to go to a lot of Arsenal games.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, to me, it doesn't feel like a huge sacrifice to let people who wouldn't ordinarily have that opportunity have it. I suppose my concern then becomes, like, how is that fair? You know, in terms of the prices, the location.
Sure. I mean, there was talk, wasn't there, of like a 39th game?
Yeah.
So that one, you know, would be played. But then I don't know how you do that in terms of the fixture list or anything like it.
Yeah.
It feels a bit kind of wormsy to me.
Yes, you know, well, exactly. And once the genie's out of the bottle, like, once you've opened that can of worms.
The genie's eating the worms, sitting there stuffing his face with fucking worms.
Yeah.
Nobody gets anything done.
Maybe it's sort of a rule that has to be kept because otherwise, where does it end?
Yeah. That might be the most common sense version of an answer to that, yeah.
Mm. But very interesting topic, I think.
I think we nearly have to go, but let me just ask you this one very quickly. John on Twitter, who's at _Jonagon, says, what do you think about Rob Holding to MLS? He can still play at a higher level, so he might not go, but he would be the best centre-back in the league, which doesn't usually spend its limited allocation on good defenders. He loves America, and we could probably get $8 million.
I don't doubt Rob Holding will play in MLS at some point in time. I'm not sure that time is right now. I think he would be open to moving abroad, certainly, and trying something really different. Embracing a different lifestyle. But I just don't know. I think MLS, at how old is he? 27?
He's going to be 28 in September, you know?
Would MLS really pay a fee that Arsenal would find acceptable?
Well, I mean, if we had to pay them $7 million for Matt Turner.
They've got that $7 million hanging around somewhere.
Yeah. You know, it works both ways here. Come on.
Listen, I think Rob Holding will play in the MLS. I just am not sure it's yet. What do you think?
I mean, he's coming up on 28, unless he gets, you know, a big offer.
He really loves American stuff.
He does, yeah. He does. What better time to go? You know, slot in there at Inter Miami with Messi and the lads. I don't know. I mean, he might. I do think he's going to go somewhere this window. So whether it's somewhere on a permanent basis or on loan, we'll have to wait and see. I think he's got a year left on his contract. So who knows? I think it could be the salary side of things in MLS rather than the transfer fee, you know? I don't know that Arsenal are going to look for a huge amount for Rob Holding, but it's whether or not the salary cap, you know, don't they have like 3 designated players per team or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know if they'd want to make Rob one of those designated players, and they probably have to meet his demands. So, listen, I think Rob Holding knows if he wants to play, he's probably got to move. we'll see. I mean, he's another name on that list, isn't he, of potential departures, and as yet not seen a great deal of movement. Only Granit Xhaka, of any real note, has gone.
Hmm. Well,
Pablo Mari, of course.
Pablo Mari, yeah. So look, yeah, there is work for the sales team to do. Hopefully they can get a bit going on that. We'll see what happens, of course, on Wednesday with the Emirates Cup game against Monaco. Right, we better leave it there. We'll have some stuff for you during the week, of course, on Patreon, regular stuff on Friday as well. For now, though, take it easy, folks, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.